This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Neurothera from Claire Labs. Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimum performance. Neurothera is a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. Used daily, Neurothera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. For more information and to purchase Neurothera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about vaccine rights. Yes, there are many rules about kids getting shots, but today we're talking to a vaccine rights attorney, the only attorney in the U.S. whose practice is focused solely on vaccine exemptions and vaccine legislative activism. And he works with clients, attorneys, legislators, and activists nationally in virtually every possible U.S. exemption setting. And we're going to talk about some of the options there. He's also an advocate, as he is today here on this show, because, it's a big controversy. And in fact, Alan Phillips is involved in a big fight in North Carolina. Alan, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's a multifaceted issue, but I'll just give you the surface here, and if you want to drill down a little bit, feel free. The North Carolina State Bar is actually suing me, demanding that I hand over years of client files that I'm required to keep confidential, and that the clients have a right to stay confidential.
Well, that just sounds so contrary to lawyer-client privilege. Makes Michael Cohen and Donald Trump seem like child's play by comparison, because they can dig into those files and they can find out who's out there unvaccinated, and basically the state can zero in on them. That sounds pretty insidious.
Well, there are multiple layers, and every one of them, in my humble but adamant opinion, are unlawful. And for example, this lawsuit sits on top of an underlying administrative procedure where they have been for the last several months, quote unquote, investigating me and asking me in that proceeding to hand over years of client files. And North Carolina law is really clear. Before they can even open up an investigation, they have to have an allegation of misconduct. In other words, they have to accuse me of doing something wrong. Right. And they're not accusing me of doing anything wrong. And this is crazy. So the underlying investigation is illegal, and therefore the lawsuit is illegal. And the bar never sues attorneys. They can investigate an attorney, and if they find misconduct on the part of the attorney, they can disbar the attorney and never see the inside of a courtroom. So why are they suing me? And I'll tell you why I think they're suing me. Of course, they don't share their, reasoning with me. Hmm. But the only difference between asking for client files in an administrative proceeding and asking for them in a lawsuit, mm-hmm. is that if the court actually orders me to hand over client files, and if I still say no, like I've said for the better part of a year in the underlying administrative proceeding, because it's an illegal proceeding and I refuse to cooperate with an illegal proceeding. It's really as simple as that. Mm. If I get a court order and refuse, I can go to jail. So the person pursuing this, and it's one individual at the North Carolina bar, has too big of an ego. He could disbar me. It wouldn't be legal, in my opinion, and I would certainly fight it, but mm-hmm. he could disbar me without ever going to court. So why is he going to court? He's going to court because he wants to prove he can get the dang files. His word is the end, and if he wants something, he's going to get it. He's frustrated that I'm maybe the first person who's ever put up as much as resistance as I have. Because what an enormous investigation and a genuine investigation, you always do whatever the bar says, because if you don't, it looks like you're hiding something. Yep. Well, I have proof that two different attorneys at the North Carolina Bar that are employed by the bar in the capital, Raleigh, North Carolina, I have proof that two of them literally made up facts and law to try to build what I would have to therefore call a fraudulent case against me. Somebody decided they don't like what I do, or they don't like me, or who knows what. They're not, you know, divulging their motivations. But North Carolina in the pharmaceutical industry is known as Vaccine Central. Yeah. Hmm. We have four of the five biggest manufacturers here and award-winning companies, pharmaceutical companies here. Not the only pharmaceutical state, but one of the really big ones, and maybe the biggest one with vaccines. I imagine that I could be an embarrassment to them, being the only one in the country who does what I do at the level that I'm doing it, at least, that if they have a pro-vaccine view or a pro-pharmaceutical industry position, or somebody's wife or husband works for the industry, who knows what it is. Yeah. But somebody doesn't like what I do, and they're going to take me down. That's really the story here. But what is really perhaps most disturbing, Dr. Hoffman, is that I've done a little bit of my own investigating, and I have determined that this is actually a years, or it looks very likely, let's say, because I have proof they've done this with me. I have evidence that they've done this with several other attorneys. They have actually disbarred innocent attorneys after making up facts and law. And not only have I heard this from other victims, and unless you see the proof, you never know if it's just somebody, you know, yelling, screaming, sour grapes, they got caught and they can't admit it, or whether they're really telling the truth. But I have talked to a couple of, and I'm just going to call them insiders for their own protection, people who are not themselves victims, but are in a position to observe this. And they have said to me quietly, yes, Alan, this goes on. They make up facts. And then they build cases against attorneys. Now, this isn't every attorney that they investigate, of course. And I don't have enough information at this point to say it's this percentage of the time or this exact number, but I have found several other attorneys claiming to be victims, either already disbarred on invented facts, or they're in the middle of proceedings like I am, although none of them are being sued, at least not yet. But I've been kicking and screaming, you know, putting up a fight and not just cooperating like normally you should do in an investigation.
So there's a political dimension to this. Is there a public outcry? Is there a website or place where people can become informed support your cause? Because I think it really is an important issue, because you're being treated like an enemy of the state rather than a courageous attorney who's upholding people's civil rights. You know, essentially, you know, our country was founded on freedom of choice, and freedom of choice in medicine is a very foundational principle, I think, in the Constitution. And yet you're being treated like a pariah.
Right. And we might hate, to use your extreme example, but I think it's a good one. We might hate rapists and murderers or those acts, but we, I think most of us would agree that they deserve to be represented so that justice prevails, whatever that ultimately should be in any given case. And again, I'm only helping people exercise their rights. I'm not helping people get out of
their obligations. It's not an underground railroad, you know, kind of thing. I mean, it's basically, yeah, you know, exploring the current legal climate to see, you know, what's feasible under law to protect the rights of parents and children. In an arena where clearly controversy remains about vaccines. Okay, folks, at this point, let's allow one of our sponsors to share an important message with you. Here it goes. Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimum performance. Excessive release of adrenaline and cortisol, plus environmental exposures and oxygenation, may be impacting your alertness, memory, and other vital functions. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. It's NeuroThera from Claire Labs. NeuroThera provides balanced neuronutrition. Used daily, NeuroThera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It promotes blood, oxygen, and glucose delivery to the brain and helps protect against oxidative stress and inflammation. NeuroThera provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. I believe in NeuroThera so much that I've included it in the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol. For more information and to purchase NeuroThera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our guest, attorney Alan Phillips. So let's talk practicalities. You know, what are some of the options that are available to parents? You know, say the parents, getting ready to enroll a kid in preschool. They haven't had the full boat of vaccines. What can they do?
If I may, Dr. Hoffman, I'd like to go back and answer your last question, because we kind of got away from that without without me really answering it. And thank you for allowing me to sort of re-steer us just briefly, and I'd be delighted to come back, of course, and answer your that immediate question. I just wanted to direct people to an article that's linked on my website that explains in more detail what's going on with the bar. Yeah, it's vaccinerights.com. Now, that's my main website for my practice and activism, but there's an article linked near the top right. It'll say something about North Carolina State Bar and a witch hunt, which is what I genuinely believe, you know, is an appropriate label for what's going on. I don't believe that I can trust the system to do the right thing, because if that would happen, the problem would have been fixed years ago whenever it first started. And it looks to me, and I have evidence to support the idea, it's been going on for years, but it's going to absolutely take an out-of-the-box solution, which for me is best summarized by saying, put a spotlight on the corruption. And all of your listeners can help if they're willing, and it doesn't cost them a dime. One of the many pieces that together, if successful, will result in putting the spotlight on the corruption has to do with the fact that not only I alone, but other organizations around the country have filed complaints against the bar attorneys themselves, who have for whom we have documentation that they have themselves have violated rules. Now, they can't investigate themselves, of course, but that's exactly what they're doing. And that suppression of the complaints against themselves itself, without even getting into the complaints, the content of the complaints, the fact they are suppressing those complaints instead of cooperating with an independent investigation is a violation of ethical rules. So they're violating the rules to prevent an investigation to see if they're violating other rules. Very interesting story. So here's the beauty of the whole thing. Nobody has to believe me or agree with my story, and people who don't know me probably shouldn't do that. I could be honest and mistaken, or I could be making it up or what have you. The support I'm asking from people consists primarily of the idea of supporting the concept that complaints against the attorneys at the bar should be investigated just like complaints against any of the rest of the attorneys. And I think everybody can get behind that concept, even people who think I'm making this all up.
I think under the circumstances, there are complaints. You're being excessively reasonable, you know, because...
Well, yeah, from my personal point of view,
the whole thing is such a sham, a miscarriage of justice, that it really cries out for being addressed.
Yeah, excuse me, please, for interrupting. But anyway, the article on my website, the one about the bar attorney witch hunts, it has links where people can go, for example, sign a petition. Doesn't cost you anything, takes a couple minutes, and you've added your voice to creating the spotlight. And the petition says the bar attorneys should be held to the same laws that all the other attorneys are held to, because, of course, they're supposed to be. They're attorneys just like I am. And they should be investigated when there are good faith complaints, and there are several good faith complaints against them. They should be investigated. So part of the spotlight is petitions. Now, there are also links to fundraisers if anybody feels moved to contribute in that way as well. There's a link to another website. I created a nonprofit corporation for the purpose of documenting and exposing the corruption. I've heard now from several other attorneys who talk about being in their own version of the same situation and so forth. So the vaccinerights.com website, the link at the upper right corner of the homepage, please check that out and please sign the petition. And stay tuned, because there are other things that are going to be happening that provide ways that people can, who wish or feel so moved, can participate. And it really is going to take the alternative health community coming together along with me. It's not something I could ever do by myself, but if I get enough support from the larger community we can put a spotlight on this and we can have the corruption looked at and they can be investigated. And if they're properly investigated, whatever the outcome is whatever the outcome is. I am convinced that properly investigated, they'll be found to have, you know, violated laws, but we'll let the investigators decide that.
Great.
So,
yeah, as to
thank those, you for
so
letting me.
Let's talk. Great. And this is an important issue, and I want our intelligent medicine listeners to follow up on that petition. But in terms of practical options for the folks, news they can use in terms of rights and vaccine exemptions.
Anywhere vaccines are required, birth, school, daycare, college, employment, military, immigration, whatever the context, there is always one or more legal exemptions available. A medical exemption is available in any context, but many times they are very difficult to get. You almost always have to have a licensed medical doctor making the recommendation, filling out a form, writing a letter, whatever the exact procedure depends on the situation. But and I think there are a couple of states that even allow licensed naturopaths.
You know, the predicament of the physician in this situation is that they can then be attacked. And I've experienced this myself professionally, is that they can question your authority to render a verdict about whether a child is, say, vulnerable to potential side effects based on arbitrary criteria. I mean, you're an MD. You can, you know, that should enable you to render an opinion. But they may say, well, you know, you're not a pediatrician or you're not a pediatric immunologist or who are you to say? Or, you know, show us the scientific papers that you've written on vaccine science. And basically, persecute you as a physician intimidate you into withdrawing, you know, and saying, look, I'm not going to get involved in this vaccine controversy. Isn't that the case a lot of the time?
Yeah, you're right on the mark there in terms of what I hear from people, what I see in my practice, that medical doctors who support medical exemptions, even legitimately and even according to law, so we're not talking about people who are somehow, you know, again, like myself, I'm saying I don't go outside of the law or my understanding of it and my advocacy for my clients and others. And, you know, the vast majority of medical doctors don't either. But some of them find themselves attacked by peers in the profession, by state or federal health agencies or, you know, in other ways, industry pressure or peer pressure or community pressure, meaning the professional medical community, different pressure from different levels, in some cases outright attack by, you know, state medical boards, for example.
Yeah, you can be disciplined, you can lose your license. I mean, in the most extreme circumstances, yeah, it's a real deal.
Yeah, and for doing the right thing in terms of the law and your obligation as and your understanding, you know, of medicine and so forth. So it's a really nasty, sometimes very high pressure arena on all fronts. But, you know, I had a medical doctor point out to me once. She says, Alan, doctors are victims too. And now she was even referring to the medical doctors who don't recognize the controversy and are pushing vaccines and genuinely believing. And I think most doctors who do this are themselves victims. They are pushing what they truly believe is something for the benefit of their patients and the community and society. But they're not aware, for example, of the injury compensation program and the now nearly $4 billion that's been paid out, $282 million just fiscal year 2017 alone. And it looks like fiscal year 18 is going to be a bigger year. It's just, and that's according to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, less than 1% of adverse events from vaccines ever gets reported. Yeah. So the data that we do have is a tiny, tiny fraction of what's probably actually occurring. Yeah. So there's this huge unknown here.
A person gets sick and there's some sort of proximal association with the vaccine. It's really hard to prove that the vaccine caused the autoimmune disease that may have developed months or years later, or a case of some vague illness like chronic fatigue syndrome or postural orthostatic hypotension, which have occurred with the HPV vaccine. It's hard to, you know, make that association. So, well, you know, stuff happens. Is it the vaccine? You know, there's no smoking gun sometimes.
But as far as the adverse event reporting system is concerned, doctors and anyone administering vaccines is required under federal law to report certain events that show up in certain time periods, regardless of whether they think the vaccine caused it or not. So completely independent of their medical professional medical opinion, they're required to report things. And surveys suggest that the vast majority, 97, 98, 99% of pediatricians and other doctors don't report.
Yeah, because
they're violating federal law.
It's a cumbersome reporting system. It takes time. That whole thing.
Well, and they get pressure not to do it from the industry, but they're violating federal law, but there's no penalty in the law for not doing it. So it's a toothless law, so to speak. So anywhere vaccines are required, people have one or more outs, medical grounds. Now, mostly you need to work with medical doctors for that. So it does come up in my practice a little bit. But in a few situations, a few states have, with regard to daycare and school exemptions, have a personal belief or philosophical exemption. Sometimes there's a procedure, hoops you got to jump through, but you don't have to justify it in terms of religious beliefs or medical conditions. You just go through the procedure. But everywhere else, most everywhere else anyway, religious objections are available. And that's the piece where I spend most of my time in my practice, helping people with religious objections. Now, sometimes with religious exemptions, you don't have to explain your religious beliefs. You just sign a form, check a box, or jump through the hoops, whatever they are, and you get the exemption. But in many situations, you do have to explain your beliefs. And in my experience, the vast majority of people who approach that task from a very reasonable, common sense place end up with an end result that just is not fully consistent with the legal requirements. It has nothing to do with anybody's intelligence. Mm-hmm. It just has to do with you either understand how the law works and you don't. And the nature of the vaccine issue just turns out to be one that for most people, when they approach it in a common sense way, they, to one degree or another, end up off the mark. For example, with healthcare workers, nurses, for example, in particular, and I mean this in the most complimentary way, they are some of the best people at shooting themselves in the foot, because they are not the only ones, but among the first ones who will go out and do all their research. They'll come back into their employer, say, here are all the studies, look how harmful flu shots are, they don't work. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that, first of all, the administrator they're talking to is not in a position to change the requirements, because this is being imposed on them from outside of the hospital. For example, the federal government has a goal of vaccinating 90% of healthcare workers by 2020 with the flu shot. So it's sort of out of their hands.
What they're saying is, please don't confuse me with the facts. It is what it is. The law is the law. And, all the scientific evidence in the world, you can bring in a wheelbarrow of studies, and that's not going to change anything.
And it's, in a world that operated from ethics and morality, that would fix the problem instantly. They'd be promoted for their, self-initiated work and research and so forth. But not only does it not change the policy, it undermines their ability to then later come back with their only legal out, which is objecting on religious grounds. And in most states, you're dealing with federal civil rights law, not a state exemption law. The state exemption laws are for kids in school and daycare, not for employees. And so there are just tremendous number of misunderstandings on both sides in that context. The employers make up exemption policies that far more often than not, in my experience, and all over the country, and I've probably worked with about 500 healthcare workers around the country over recent years, and hospitals make up policies that violate federal law. They don't even realize it's a federal civil rights issue, and then employees go do their research and unwittingly, of course, shoot themselves in the foot. Because
isn't it a little disingenuous to say you're a cosmopolitan atheist or agnostic, and all of a sudden you claim that you have a religious orientation that prohibits you from obtaining vaccines? I mean, can't they spot that a mile away as being a kind of a phony gambit?
Well, one of the problems with religious exemptions is the question is not what do you think is religion or religious, but what meets the legal definition. And this is a 3-hour discussion I'm trying to condense in the next 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But, and I mean that literally, that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah,
the law protects religious beliefs and practices, and the law has to define what that is for purposes of protection of religious beliefs and practices. If we got to decide that, then everything would be a protected religious belief or practice, and that wouldn't make any sense. But the way the law defines it goes way beyond what the common sense thinking for most people is when you hear the word religion. You say religion, you picture a building down the street where people show up every Saturday or Sunday or whatever it is in their particular religion. But the law protects religious beliefs and practices in that stereotypical sense, but also well beyond that. And it doesn't matter whether you belong to an organized religion at all, for example. It doesn't matter which one you belong to. If you do, you can be Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, any mixture of those, none of those. And as long as your beliefs fit the legal definition or the legal requirements, then you have protected religious beliefs, or your beliefs qualify for exemption.
Very consonant with the spirit of the founding fathers, you know, when they established this country, is that this is a country where we value freedom of choice, whether it be religious, whether it be freedom of choice in healthcare. And, you know, I think that this issue about vaccines should be situated within a broader understanding about freedom of choice in healthcare. You know, but we have options. We have options in terms of how we treat diseases, that we can't be compelled by the government to treat medical conditions in a certain way, or practitioners who offer alternatives that are scientifically based and sincere and safe, that these options should be made available to people rather than one monolithic set of choices. And the vaccine, I think, is really sort of the marquee issue in medical freedom of choice, but it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
Well, vaccines legally are really in a class all their own. And when people try to make analogies to other medical and health issues, it breaks it down. And the reason, or a primary reason, is at least in the mainstream model, your vaccine protects other people. So you have an obligation to get your vaccine, not only protect yourself, but protect the rest of the community. Because if you don't get your vaccine, somehow magically all the other vaccines don't work and everybody's going to get infected. And I'm being sarcastic here, but for a reason, because herd immunity has been disproved over and over again in medical literature and other documented instances, but they cling to that because that's the rationale why you don't get to decide whether to put vaccines in your or your children's bodies. And as an adult, you get to decide to refuse medical treatment and die anyway if you want to do that, or take your chances with a disease or alternative health treatments or whatever. You get to decide that, but not with vaccines, because
it's
now
a
you're
a health issue. Yeah.
Right. And so they argue that it's unique and different. And that's the basis. But we have this huge unknown in terms of the adverse events that are caused, and it's going to stay unknown as long as they can keep that information from being documented. Because one of the things that vaccines are doing, and probably the primary financial piece here, is they're creating a widespread chronic illness at a variety of different levels, you know, from mild seasonal allergies or attention deficit to full-blown autism and other kinds of neurological and immunological more serious conditions. And every person with a chronic illness is a potential lifelong customer of other pharmaceutical treatments. So, and the industry has acknowledged that they maximize their profits by not curing illness, but by managing it, you know, over the course of a person's life. So it's a $30 to $40 billion a year industry for the vaccines themselves, but it's probably a $1 trillion a year industry treating the vaccine caused or vaccine exacerbated chronic illnesses.
And certainly, you know, we recently did a podcast on that subject about the vaccine controversy. And that's a good companion piece for today's podcast, because, you know, the science is not settled as much as they'd like to tell us that it is. There are issues related to vaccines, and I got to say that, you know, personally, I'm not inalterably opposed to vaccines, but I think that we need to investigate further the potential consequences of taking vaccines. We need to be selective about vaccines. We had Dr. Thomas Cowan, C-O-W-A-N, author of Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illnesses, on at the end of last month in July, who offered a comprehensive critique of vaccines. So the work you do, Alan Phillips, is important. And, you know, it sounds like it's challenging. And, you know, I really want to commend you for taking a stand and for being a unique individual on this front.
Well, thank you for the acknowledgement. That means a lot, truly, and I really appreciate that. And I just say that I support people in having the right to make an informed choice. And if there's truly all information for any position is readily available and people are free to make choices, we're going to see a whole range of choices. And as a legal professional, I welcome the whole range. What I object to is the suppression of information that should be part of people's decision-making process. And if they decide they want to get some vaccines or delay the vaccines or do all or none of them, I might agree or disagree with any person on an individual personal level, but as a professional, I stand behind any informed choice, whether I personally agree with it or not. And I really think that's the fundamental issue here, kind of a, I think as you referred to, a civil rights issue that people with anything, you know, if you don't get a vaccine, you might get a disease in the future and have a problem. If you do get a vaccine, you immediately have a risk of one degree or level or another of adverse reaction, potential chronic condition, or even death. And nobody can tell you what your risk or your child's risk is. They can only offer their opinion about what they think it might be. And of course, there's a wide range of different opinions on that one. So I feel like we should have the choice. We should have access to complete information. And then whatever, wherever the cards, you know, fall from there, so be it.
Well, vaccine choice, I think, is a better term than vaccine refusal or vaccine denial, or the pejorative term that's applied to people who are challenging vaccines, anti-vaxxers, because it really is a matter of informed choice, and we need to know about all the options, the upside, the downside, and as in other medical decisions that we make. So I want to thank you for your work. Give us again the way that we can, people can get in contact with you and read up on this subject.
Sure. Go to vaccinerights.com. vaccinerights.com. There's lots of free information there. There's an ebook that people can purchase if they want to get more detailed information about how the law works and their legal rights. There's people, of course, can contact me by phone or email on the site. And information about my dispute with the North Carolina State Bar, as I mentioned earlier, that I hope people will look at and offer support in whatever way they feel is appropriate for them. And people are welcome to call and email me. I spend a lot of time answering calls and emails and don't charge for that. And happy to give people at least preliminary answers to their questions and help them, steer them in a direction that's appropriate for them.
Well, thank you so much. And I think that ebook, I think, would be a good starting point for people trying to investigate this issue further. I appreciate very much your time. That's Alan Phillips, Esquire. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.